Hello, welcome to episode 40 of the Gita Decoded. This is a series in which we look at what the Bhagavad Gita means as far as its text and as far as allegorical aspects is concerned. We have in the studio with us Sister Denise, who's been sharing her insight and wisdom into this ancient scripture that has fascinated Bharat, India for so long. Sister Denise, a very warm welcome to episode 40.
Thank you.
I must admit, I can't believe that we have come this far in the Bhagavad Gita, and I must admit, I'm really, really looking forward to this and future episodes because I've learned a lot and I'm sure the viewers have done so as well. And thank you so much for whatever you have shared thus far.
Thank you.
Sister Denise, verse 1 until the end of the verses in chapter 11 is one of those chapters that causes one to fasten one's seatbelt, because almost everybody who's listening to this has read chapter 11, and it's a bit of a shock every time you read it because of what it contains. What is your take on this?
There's a variety of things going on here, and the first few stanzas is Arjuna saying, okay, I've heard about it, now I want to see it, I want to have a direct experience. And if you look at the wider view of the Gita, you know that God says, you know, there's very, very few people who can really see me, know me as I really am. And Arjuna is coming closer and closer and wanting to almost merge with God here. And even there is one stanza where he says, I am you. So this idea of the union with God is a very deep one, because when you are in that deep yoga, there is no differentiation in terms of your experience between the self and God. And I think what yoga is all about is removing that distance. So this chapter to me is where Arjuna is saying, if you think I'm worthy, just show yourself to me, reveal yourself to me, unclothe yourself of all your analogies and poetic references. I want to see the real thing. And then he shows the universal form, the terrifying form, because he shows his aspect as the destroyer. And it's so difficult for people to deal with, you know, falling in love with destruction, which is a strange phenomenon.
Sister Denise, in earlier episodes, we came across the term Buddhi Yoga, which caused you to make reference to the intellect. What I find necessary to mention at this point is that for a vast majority of people, although they believe in God, God is just a concept. It's never been an experience. He, she has never been an experience. And many hunger, like Arjuna, for an experience. Could you tell us, is God a concept or can he be experienced? There are many who aren't aware that one can cross the bridge.
Of course, and going back to this categories of people, you know, there's just very, very few people who even want that. You know, because in a way, wanting that means that you have to totally expose yourself, because God can see absolutely right through you. So I think the person who is really pure is the one who can go close to God. Arjun is absolutely sincere. He may be confused and all of this, but all the emotions that he goes through are of one who has absolutely nothing to hide. He doesn't have any shame. And so here he is saying, no, I want to come close, I want to come close. And here's God saying, okay, I think I will show myself to you. You know, in the stories of magic and so on that you get in the different myths that occur, also in the Mahabharata, there are people who change form. And God is also known as Bahurupi, the one who has many forms. Maya, Ravan in the Ramayana, is also changing forms. So you have you know, the beautiful form of God and the terrible form of God, because there are so many different layers to God, and God is not an invention of man, as some people would mm-hmm. have it. But the thing is, God is a soul who is not a human soul. He's higher than human souls, and because of that, to a large extent, inaccessible, but he can reveal himself to that human or those humans that he wants to. And what would make you reveal yourself to someone is if you feel absolutely safe. Of course, that God doesn't need to feel safe. Certainly Arjun feels safe with God in his beautiful form. But as he begins to show his terrifying form, then Arjuna starts to have his hair standing on end and so on. And it's almost like a mind-altering substance where God is carrying Arjun into the visionary realm of altered states of consciousness. And he does say, you cannot see me with your normal eyes. You can only see me if I give you the divine eye. So here God is definitely enabling Arjuna to have a vision, because one of the attributes of God is he has the keys to divine vision, so he can do that. And then when he carries Arjuna into this completely different level of consciousness, still Arjuna can hold himself together with that. And although it elicits many, many emotions, including confusion and not understanding, because he cannot comprehend the destroyer. Again, looking at the Trimurti, Brahma, Vishnu, Shankar, in this he's showing everything is being destroyed, but he holds the totality of everything. And what we also need to remember is that anything material is transient, you see. So he can know about it, make it appear, and he can know about its dissolution, the destruction of everything. Because the nature of material things is they come into being, persist for a while, disappear, and then they can come back again. So God is enabling Arjuna to perceive the material world in a totally different way from normal. And I think that is very crucial. If a person really wants to reach spiritual heights, you have to be, as it were, neutral about creation, sustenance, destruction, because these are all states of being.
Yes, Denise, here's what I found fascinating. We meet Arjuna and Krishna at the beginning of chapter 1, and before that they encounter each other in the Mahabharata episode. And throughout this entire time, there was a conversation between the two of them. And Krishna and Arjuna knew of each other. They were talking to each other. So Arjuna had some understanding of God. And yet, when he had to see God in or wanted to see God and experience God at a deeper level, God says to him in verse 8, "But you are not able to see me with your own eyes. I give to you a divine eye. Behold my majestic power." What does that say about human beings and their relationship with God who do not have the divine eye?
Here you see Arjuna having a mystical experience, which very, very few people can manage, because if you want to go there, you know, you're almost going to the edge of insanity, and most people don't want to go anywhere near that. But the thing is, if you want to merge with God in terms of experience, not that you can actually become God, but you can have that experience of going to where God is and merging with God, then you have to transcend your humanity and become extraordinary. This is the mystical side, you see. And in the mystical side, you have to be able to see the beautiful and the terrible. And that is just the way the mystical world is. You see the extreme dark, the extreme light. I mean, he is also described as brighter than a thousand suns, which of course is unbearable because a person's eyes can hardly see one sun, let alone a thousand. So he's really taking Arjuna beyond the extremes of normal human experience, because he is way beyond what a human is. So to take Arjuna to his own level and say, okay, this is how I am, this is my existence, and I'm giving you a glimpse, but I'm not giving it to anybody else because they can't manage it.
At this point, we meet the narrator again. And it's interesting because Arjuna is the one experiencing it, but I think that's why the writer did not want us to see it through the eyes of Arjuna, but through the eyes of an independent witness, which was Sanjay. He describes what he saw about God. I think his answer is properly encapsulated in the last line of verse 9, which goes, "He revealed to Arjuna his majestic supreme form," which is a form other than the Krishna form that Arjuna saw earlier. It was awesome.
Absolutely awesome. And the other thing is that this majestic form is generally the form of Vishnu, you see. And so it is believed in Hinduism that if a person does get a vision of Vishnu, it means that they've arrived, they have reached samadhi, you know. So I'll just connect it into Prajapita Brahma, because you see, he also was given a vision of Vishnu. And this vision of Vishnu also said, "I am Vishnu, so are you." So this created a lot of confusion in him, because who is Vishnu? Is Vishnu Krishna? Is Krishna the perfected form, whose imperfect form is Arjuna? Or are we talking about Shiva, the incorporeal? So the kind of merging of all of these different identities becomes confusing to the person who is unable to distinguish. Well, the only way that you can experience is through your mind, you see. And your mind will give you an experience, but it will not define that experience. And the mental experience that is beyond normal experience is outside the range of the intellect. So then God has to explain, because you cannot figure it out by yourself.
The next aspect that I would like to take up is Arjuna's response to God, having seen this part of God. It is contained in verse 14, which reads, "Then Arjuna, who was filled with amazement, whose hair was standing on end, bowing his head to the Lord with joined palms, said," and the words that he said. So it's quite obvious that Arjuna was awestruck and humbled by what he saw in God.
He doesn't know what how quite to deal with that, because it's completely beyond what he could imagine, you see. And so here you have the description of the universal form of God, where everything and everyone in the universe is all merged into God. And the way I would understand this is not that God is these things, but the knowledge of all of this is within God. So that if God is going to reveal his sanskaras, he has the sanskaras of knowing everything about the world. He knows things by their images. So he will show everything that there is in the whole cycle of history, the gods, the goddesses, the battles, the war, the creation, the sustenance, the destruction. Everything is known to him. So he will sort of open up his sanskaras and show, this is what is contained in my mind. But people ordinarily would say that, you know, God is the universe. And definitely, I think it makes much more sense to look at it this way, that God is the knower. He is the omniscient one. And all the scenes that take place in the human drama of history and geography are held within the being of God, which he then opens up. And of course, it looks like very shocking and awesome and mind-blowing for Arjuna.
And then from verse 23, the tone changes. And this is the part that you touched on earlier, Sister Denise, where Arjuna's sense of awe changes to one of fear because of what he sees in God then. And he says in verse 31, "Tell me who you are, capital Y, of so terrible a form. Salutations to you, O best of gods. Have mercy. I wish to understand you, primal one. Indeed, I do not comprehend what you are doing." Here we have Arjuna, who has an increasing hunger and fascination for God and is not content with what God speaks about himself, asks to see God, and God, granting his dear son's wish, gives him what he asks for, and Arjuna cannot handle it.
Because of the destruction, you see, the creation, the sustenance, and the destruction. The instruction that God is giving to Arjun is go and kill your relatives, go and fight. And he's saying, I can't do that because it's not moral, you see. And so Krishna, God in his friendly form, is explaining, but Arjuna can't understand it. And then he sees God containing within himself all the scenes of the destruction, the dissolution of the world.
Is that what is meant in a metaphorical sense? As the many torrents of the rivers flow towards the ocean, those heroes of the world of men entering your flaming mouths, as moths enter a blazing flame to their destruction with great speed, so also these creatures swiftly enter your mouth to their destruction. Is that the war you're referring to?
Well, yes.
Okay.
And you see, the thing is about the Mahabharata is it is the war to end all wars. It is the end of the world. That is what is the meaning of Mahabharata.
I'm going to stop you there. This text was written thousands of years ago. This war that you're referring to, is it past or is it future?
Well, it has to be recurrent. And this is, I think, an important secret of the Gita. So God opens up his sanskaras. Okay, I know the beginning, the duration, the continuation, and the end of the world. It's in me. And so it plays out historically in real time, but it's foreknown by God. So the sanskaras of the knowledge of the whole history and geography of the world is contained within God. So he opens himself up and he shows the whole history of the world. And then Arjun cannot understand it because God is supposed to be the creator and the sustainer, but then as a destroyer, it doesn't compute, you see. So then when he sees the destruction, and you see, the reason why Krishna is showing him the destruction is to show him that, look, this has already happened. And I think we can also say that every cycle this happens. And so you, Arjuna, are an instrument in this playing out of the history of the world. So you have to perform your role because it's anyway there in the script and you just do it. And it's only really by seeing this that he's able to say, oh, yeah, you know. You know, people think that they are free, that they're responsible for what they're doing and so on. Because of the laws of karma, you are held accountable, you have to suffer. But there's another level on which everything is destined and you have no choice. You have to play out your destiny. And I think this is what Krishna is showing to Arjuna, you have a role to play in this. It's already done. It happens frequently. Don't worry about it. Just do it.
Yeah, this is a very intense chapter, isn't it, Sister
Denise? Very intense.
Okay, so we're going now to verse 32. It's one of those verses that caused me to scratch my head a bit. The blessed Lord spoke, I am time, the mighty cause of the world destruction, who has come forth to annihilate the worlds. Even without any action of yours, all these warriors who are arrayed in the opposing ranks shall cease to exist. What does God mean, Sister Denise, when he says, I am time? I didn't realize time was someone. I thought time was something.
Well, no, one of the epithets of God is I am time, and time is also death. So I am death, Mahakal, Mahakaleshwara, one of the famous temples of Shiva. Shiva is the great death. Here he is describing, I will tell you the beginning, I will tell you the continuation, and now I'm showing you the end. And after the end, of course, comes a new beginning.
Okay, so Sister Denise, when God reveals himself to Arjuna, he first tells him about himself, Arjuna. He describes Arjuna to Arjuna in the story of immortality. Then he speaks about his own identity, which is God himself. And then he teaches him about the world.
Mm.
So, three things.
So, you, the soul, I, God, and then the creation. Interesting what he says here is, even if you don't do anything, all of these people are going to be killed. They will cease to exist in terms of their manifestation. A person can watch a film. Nowadays we have these tiny little pen drives where you've got many, many gigabytes and you can have a very expensive film held in this little thing. So the actual reality of it, is it this little thing? Or is it what you perceive, you see? So here, what we're seeing is that perception of destruction and destruction itself, and the fact that it can be replayed and you'll see the whole thing again, you see, it gives you a very, very different take on what we consider as the real world, you see. And he's doing this as a mystical experience, as an out-of-body experience, as a visionary experience. And he's saying, okay, now that you've seen everything, now play your role. You see, because you're in the movie, you have to play your role.
In verse 33, the words read, therefore stand up and attain glory, having conquered the enemy, enjoy prosperous kingship. These have already been struck down by me. Be the mere instrument, O Arjuna. Now that gives one a whole different take on it. What is then the real message here for Arjuna? Why does he have to be there then anyway?
Well, you've got things on a number of levels. On the one hand, when Krishna became the charioteer of Arjuna, he said, I'm not going to fight. He's just there to tell him the knowledge. Now here, it's already done, you see. So he's not doing it, he's just saying, this is the way the drama of the world plays out. So it's not that God has caused the destruction, he knows about it. And so I think we have to read it this way, where it says, these have already been struck down by me. It doesn't mean he's literally striking them down, but he knows about it. He knows before they're struck down, while they're being struck down, and after they're struck down. And then Arjuna has to just be the actor to play the role and do it. So he has to be the instrument. And this is really what spiritual practice involves, being an instrument of God. There's a very complicated karmic issue here, and very difficult to interpret, very difficult to understand. But here it is, as you said, very ancient text, you know, and the idea that the global cataclysm has occurred from time to time is known by God, and when it's the time of the Gita, that's when this thing gets played out, which is very terrifying. But God says, don't worry about it, because it's just like a movie. It happens from time to time. Whenever you watch the movie, these are the scenes.
Okay, Sister Denise, I think we'll stop right here. We have not come to the end of chapter 11 because its message is so vast. We will take it up in the next episode. I hope that you have found this understanding that Sister Denise shared of chapter 11 as riveting and as fascinating as I have, because we tend to read things and understand it on our own level, and Sister Denise comes to the show with a totally different perspective and shares the many layers that the Bhagavad Gita offers to understand and to appreciate. And also she has shared not just her understanding of the text, but her own experience of being aware of being a soul and her own experience of God. So she brings all of this to this show, and I hope that you are able to grasp the message that Sister Denise has been sharing and take it home with you and apply it in your life. So please will you join us in the next episode of the Bhagavad Gita series entitled The Gita Decoded, where we will look at the latter part of chapter 11. Thank you so much for joining us, and Sister Denise, thank you very much. Take care and goodbye to you.